You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So hype right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. Yeah. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my Seas jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the Seas, it's the best way. Melly.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. I want to thank you for making this show part of your daily routine. Whatever it is that you're doing, wherever you're going, really appreciate you making this show a part of your day. I am John Corrales. I cover the Boston Celtics for MassLive.com, and I am here in Philadelphia, rainy, crappy Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on the night before the Boston Celtics open the regular season, as I'm watching the Toronto Raptors get their rings and the NBA season is now beginning. I'm here to talk about, obviously, the opening game against the Sixers. I'll talk about that, spend the first couple of segments talking about that. And then in the third segment, I'll share a radio appearance I did in Bangor with my good friend Rich Kimball, and that'll be the show. So why don't we just dive into it? First of all, Celtics had a practice today on Tuesday before heading out to Philadelphia. Not much coming out of that. Jaylen Brown spoke. It was kind of interesting to hear Jaylen Brown talk about his extension. He's like, yeah, it was just a normal day. I signed myself up for $103 million, $115 if I really have a great next few years, but just a normal, regular old day. I can really appreciate how Jaylen deadpanned his way through that. But he's just kind of really keeping himself as level-headed as he possibly can. I'm sure in a private moment, he was not quite as level-headed. Like I've said before, it's like hitting the lottery. And there's got to be a moment where you just like, he's got to be on his phone with his mom and just, How do you not cry at that moment? How are you not like jumping up and down, doing backflips and shit? So it was really funny just to see Jaylen's like, yeah, a normal day. Uh-huh. Right. Sure. Normal day. But Jaylen's in the fold. That's good. We did learn that Taco Fall is still in the concussion protocol with some mystery thing. I don't know what happened to Taco Fall. He's fine. He's in the concussion protocol and he has to clear his way through and take all of the steps, but he's obviously fine. I saw a picture of him getting on the plane to come to Philadelphia. I saw a picture. I saw him at Jaylen Brown's event on Saturday night. So he was out. He was fine being out and in those lights and whatever. He, after the practice, they said he got hit and he had some, I don't know, something with the, in the head in the after the individual work. But he was at the swim events. They did a thing where they were teaching kids how to swim, or the kids were teaching them how to swim. And he looked fine. So somewhere along the way, he got hit in the head. I don't know exactly what happened. Brad Stevens called it a freak thing. I got to figure out what that freak thing is. Very curious. But he's out. Not that he would have played much. That's not a situation where I think he would have played. But you never know. Spot opportunity. And that's out. Romeo Langford also wouldn't have played much no matter what, but out with that knee soreness as he's trying to recover from that sprained knee. I don't know. Somebody mentioned it on Twitter. I've said this to somebody. I think this is kind of going to be a redshirt year for Romeo Langford. I don't know how much time he's really going to get. I think between his jump shot, which I see him working on that jumper in practice, I personally don't like the way it looks. I don't like it. I'm used to a traditional jump shot. I learned the traditional way. And it's important that it's not how everybody's going to shoot. It's important to know that. some guys, they just shoot weird. And if it goes in, it goes in. You know, like I would never teach kids to shoot how Reggie Miller shot the ball, but it went in. And what am I going to tell Reggie Miller to change how he shoots his shot? No, it's stupid. So not everybody's going to have like a certain kind of form, a traditional form. But when I look at Romeo Langford, I mean, he's a guy that shot's not going in. So he needs, I think, a little bit more of a traditional form. The one thing I noticed, he has almost like a Sean Marion-ish, which I know is already triggering people, but like he has this kind of flick that's in front of his forehead versus a shot that extends your arm up above your head. You look at a guy who takes a jump shot, a normal jump shot. He puts it in the pocket right by his hip, raises it up with his elbow in, and extends his arm all the way up so it straightens out and shoots the ball. He snaps his wrist and shoots the ball. Watch Jason Tatum shoot the ball. That's what he does. Romeo Langford does not do that. So his arm's always bent, and it's a very low release. I think that's a real work in progress. He's also been like super smooth, and he gets to places on the floor that he needs to get to without seemingly much effort. So he's got skills, but the shooting form needs work. So he's out. So the Celtics weren't going to count on those guys much anyway, if at all. They're going to have their regular crew, assuming that the starting lineup that we saw at the in most of the preseason, that's going to be it. All those guys are healthy. Kemba, Jalen, Jason, Gordon, Tice, that's going to probably be your starting lineup. I can't imagine that they're going to go with Poirier, because I would say Cantor is definitely going to be on the second unit. So I would expect that to remain the case. Poirier would be the only guy that seems strong enough to maybe bang with Joel Embiid. I don't think they're going to go with him. Robert Williams is not ready. He also just got out of the concussion protocol. I don't know that he's going to play a ton. So Daniel Tice, I think, is going to be the starting center. That's going to be your starting lineup. And it seems like the Philadelphia 76ers are going to go with Simmons, Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, Al Horford, Joel Embiid. Really one of the best starting fives you're going to find in the NBA. And that Richardson pickup from Miami was a really underrated move in this crazy offseason. I was watching the TNT Monster Marathon pregame, and one of the stats that Ernie blurted out was like something like 70%, 77% of the eligible free agents changed teams, which is just wild. So whatever the number was, it was just under 80%. To get Richardson was big, and because of all that movement, I think it kind of flew under the radar. That's a nice signing. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how these teams match up, because on the Philly side, that's a big team. It's a big team. I mean, as Brad Stevens said about a week or two ago, you have guys like Tobias Harris was playing the four. Now he's playing the three. Al Horford was playing the five. Now he's playing the four. You know, Ben Simmons is like 6'7". Richardson is about the same size. Harris is about the same size, 6'8", 6'9". Horford is 6'11". Embiid is 7 feet tall. That's a lot of size. And the Celtics just don't have the size to combat that. At the same time, it's going to be very interesting to see how Philly defends the Celtics. Because while the Celtics are obviously going to have problems defending the Sixers, every team's going to have problems defending the Sixers. It's going to be hard to deal with that size. And it's going to be hard to go up against that size. But if you're constantly moving, then look at the starting lineup. Al Horford, who's Al Horford going to guard? Gordon Hayward? Okay. I mean, we watched Al Horford switch onto wings and hang for stretches. But in this game, he's only going to be able to guard wings. Like it's different from when he was in Boston, where he played the five, and if you ran a pick and roll and he switched onto the guard, no problem. Or if you ran it with a wing, he switched onto a wing, no problem. He could hold his own. And then eventually he got back to his man, and it was fine. But when the Celtics are trotting out Kemba, Jalen, Jason, Gordon. And is Al going to guard Daniel Tyson? Who the hell does Joel Embiid guard? I'm curious to see how they handle it, because the Celtics are just going to like three-man weave old school like Harlem Globetrotters and try to get some of those bigs to make a mistake. If I'm the Celtics, I'm really emphasizing the speed and versatility of those wings and attacking and driving and kicking and getting those big guys into a rotation where maybe they're a half step slow, and then working that advantage, turning a disadvantage into an advantage, and then maybe you leave Joel Embiid behind on an island and he's prone to fouling. You get him into some foul trouble. And now that changes the entire dynamic of this game. So with that in mind, with that said, I'm going to take a break here for a moment. I'm going to come back and talk about if the Celtics win, what will happen, and if Philly wins, what will happen. We're going to do that when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
One of two things is going to happen on Wednesday night in Philadelphia. The Boston Celtics are going to win, or the Philadelphia 76ers are going to win. That's the only two options, unless something, you know, drastic happens. That's going to be it. How will either of those two things come about? If the Celtics win, how will this game go? Well, if the Celtics win, we're going to go right carry on the conversation that I had from the end of the first segment. They will move the ball, stay connected, all of the stuff that Brad has been talking about. This is where the Team USA stuff might come into play, because Kemba, Jalen, Jason all work together in China, and that familiarity is going to come in real handy, because as good as Simmons and Richardson are defensively, I don't trust Harris, and the small wing player is going to put a lot of pressure on Horford. And Horford is obviously a fantastic defensive player. We just watched him be a fantastic defensive player. We haven't had him have to guard wings primarily like this. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Celtics can pull it off. If they win this game, they will be able to effectively pick and roll. They will be able to get Joel Embiid involved in the pick and roll. They will drive. They will kick. And they will move the ball a lot to get guys into rotation. So Embiid is going to have to step up. They're going to have to get him mobile. The importance of getting Embiid mobile is, first of all, you want him moving as much as he has, as much as he can on defense. You want to defend Philly with your offense, okay? Move the ball so much and get so many guys involved on the defensive end for Philly. Get Embiid making decisions. Get Embiid stepping over and rotating. Get Embiid involved in pick and rolls as often as he can. Get him moving. Get him tired. Get these guys tired defending your wings. Then when they're on offense, maybe they have tired legs. Maybe it doesn't show itself off in the beginning of the game. But if you're constantly putting pressure on these guys, and remember, Philly's not deep. They're not a deep team. They got Mike Scott off the bench. Everybody's excited about Matisse Thybulle, but Thybulle is an extraordinary defender already, but he's not a big-time offensive player. He's definitely not a shooter, so he'll generate offense just by steals and blocks and stuff like that, but after that, it's kind of dicey. You know, Shake Milton, they're not going to get a lot, so the Sixers are relying a lot on their starters. So you get those guys moving, you take advantage of, okay, fine, we're not big, but we're nimble, we're quick, and running those guys as much as you possibly can early, and then taking advantage of your depth. Because then the Celtics can take advantage of those tired legs, and maybe it's somebody like Carson Edwards that comes in and goes off because somebody's tired and can't defend. Or maybe it's Cantor who takes advantage of a more tired Embiid and can maybe draw a couple of fouls. That's the other thing about getting Embiid moving and mobile. You increase the risk of him drawing fouls. So if the Celtics are to win this game, Embiid foul trouble is going to be a part of it. And then Al Horford obviously shifts over to the five. Frankly, as I'm talking this out, maybe we don't want Al Horford shifting over to the five, because then that takes away one of the things that the Celtics are hoping to take advantage of. But regardless, anytime you get Embiid off the floor, I think it's a good thing. So getting those guys tired, putting pressure on their defense, and really pressure on their continuity. Where I just said the Celtics' advantage is going to be their familiarity starting from China, the Sixers are at a little bit of a disadvantage because Horford's new, Richardson's new, a lot of these guys are new. They've only played a few preseason games together. There's going to be some breakdowns. So that, again, the ball movement, the ball pressure, the pressure of ball movement, all of that stuff, that connected offense, the type of basketball that Brad Stevens has been pushing these guys to play, that can really take advantage of the Sixers' lack of continuity. And maybe it would work better now than it will in the middle of the season. But I think that's going to be, if the Celtics win this game, that's going to be at the core of it. Their offense, pushing, getting those guys tired, getting them out of position, taking advantage of a lack of continuity, maybe getting some foul trouble. If the Sixers win, I think it's a pretty obvious thing how the Sixers can beat the Celtics, and that's just really attacking that center spot. And you're going to ask the Celtics defense to do a lot, and we know that they're not going to be the greatest defensive team. It doesn't seem like, anyway. The Celtics are banking on that continuity with Tice knowing all of the defensive calls and understanding what Brad Stevens is trying to do. The Sixers can just blow that out of the water because we've seen Joel Embiid just destroy Daniel Tice. So I'm expecting like the first three plays of the game tomorrow to be some kind of action that just gets Embiid deep in the paint, in the post, against Tice, and really just tries to use his strength. It may work to the Celtics' advantage to have them constantly focus on Embiid. Like, I get you don't want to have Embiid go for 50, but if they're constantly going to the post and the Celtics are unable to really stop him, but they're also unable to get Ben Simmons going, Tobias Harris going, Al Horford going, these other guys that are important offensive elements to the Sixers game. And Embiid can't play the whole game. And frankly, if Embiid wants to push and bang and post and waste his energy there, as a Celtic, I'd say let him punch himself out, because I've seen it before, you've seen it before. When Embiid goes nuts early in the post and he's really like expending a lot of energy early, by the fourth quarter, he really tends to rely on his jumper. He tends to take a few more threes. So I think it's the strategy that the Sixers are going to try, because then once you get past Tice, then it's Cantor and Poirier and Time Lord. But it's going to be interesting to see how that works and if there's any sort of counter to it, any sort of downside to it. But I think the Sixers are going to rely on that. They're going to rely on Al Horford pick and rolls, pick and pops. And I think they're just going to try to take advantage of a weak Celtics defense to really get going. And I think if the Sixers are able to take advantage of their defense and their size, if they're going to win this game, whatever the Celtics are trying to do offensively, if they force the Celtics to take mid-range jumpers and not attack and get out of the things that I was saying before, if they force the Celtics into a jump shooting game, then they can rebound misses. Ben Simmons gets into transition. Tobias Harris gets into transition. And then it's over. At that point, it's over. So if you see the Celtics start relying on jumpers, forget it. Pack it up. Might get blown out. So I think putting Embiid in the post and getting him to get the Celtics, just destroy the Celtics down there, and then by virtue of their size, forcing the Celtics into a jump shooting game, that's going to be how the Sixers end up winning this game. So that's your Sixers-Celtics sort of preview on this Wednesday podcast. When I come back, you'll hear me and Rich Kimball up at the Zone in Bangor, Maine. We'll do that right out of the break here on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
Hey, we are back on downtown here on a Tuesday afternoon. Time for us to talk basketball. Just a little more than 24 hours away from opening night for the Boston Celtics. And John Corrales already running up the steps and going at it with Rocky in the city of brotherly love.
Yeah, I'm in Philly. I beat the team here. That's how excited I am for basketball to be back.
Well, it is so great to have opening night here. And what a terrific opening game it is.
Oh, man. I got to tell you, just from a personal perspective, I love these high-intensity road games. Being in a hostile environment where the team's fans are just all so wound up and they are all passionate and they hate that visiting team so much, it just brings this electric energy. And I know when I was playing, that was my favorite environment to be in because there's nothing better than shutting up a crowd on the road. So the Celtics are going to have a tough time doing it, but that's going to be an electric atmosphere. And if they can accomplish that, it's going to be a great way to start the season again.
Well, we'll talk about how they might quiet that crowd tomorrow night in a moment. But first, let's talk some business and a new contract for Jaylen Brown. Is this a good deal for both sides?
Well, I think so. It's a lot of money for sure. But I think in today's NBA, when you look at Kemba Walker making $33, $34 million, Gordon Hayward making the same amount of money. I mean, we know that Hayward got hurt, but when he got that money, he was an all-star and a superstar-level player. Those guys are the ones that are going to get paid the big money. Jaylen Brown getting paid $11 million less than the star players, it kind of falls in line with what you expect from a young guy going into his first like real contract, his non-rookie contract, and who's right now still like a step below those guys. So while on the surface you say, wow, potential for $115 million if he hits all of his incentives, probably $103 million for sure, it's a lot. But it works out for him. It works out for the team. There's no distraction. They've got one of their key guys locked up for at least the next 5 years if they want him the full 5 years. So I think in today's NBA, in today's business environment, that works.
All right, let's talk about tomorrow night. Celtics 76ers in the opener. Is it still going to be Daniel Tice starting at the five?
That appears to be the indication, although Brad Stevens could throw everybody a curveball. I would not put anything past Stevens after having talked up Daniel Tice this whole time. But I think what he's going to go for is familiarity over maybe somebody that could better handle Embiid on a one-on-one basis. But I just be clear, there's nobody on the Celtics that can handle Embiid on a one-on-one basis. So But there are guys who are stronger than Theis that you say, well, if they're going to post and beat up, you just try and go with the stronger guy. But he's going to, Brad Stevens is going to go with the whole being greater than the sum of its parts. And that even though there might be a stronger guy than Theis, the overall familiarity with the defense and understanding the team concepts and everybody kind of working together, I think he values that more right now. And if they can play a swarming defense that's connected and can force the ball out of Embiid's hands rather than trying to challenge him as he posts and try to get him to pass it up, if they can be connected and rotate well behind Embiid, maybe they can pick off a couple of passes and defend him better that way.
Are there some matchups other than that one, obviously, that might favor the Celtics against Philly?
Well, it's interesting because they have, Philly doesn't really have anybody that can guard guards. And so Boston has advantages on the wings. And so I think it's going to be an interesting kind of irresistible force versus immovable object type of thing going on, where Boston has some dynamic wing players, Tatum, you know, Brown, obviously, Kemba Walker, obviously, Gordon Hayward, hopefully as he progresses and gets back to his former self. That's going to be hard for those other guys to defend. And they've got some players that can do it, but I don't know that Tobias Harris is going to be a lockdown defender on these guys. They might bring Josh Richardson in to try and do a job on somebody that might be going off, but there's still going to be a little bit of that kind of Celtics. It just might be a Celtics score, Philly scores, and whoever kind of is most efficient in their scoring could come out on top.
We're talking with John Corrales here on Downtown. So what would be reasonable expectations for this team?
Well, I don't want to go too crazy with them because, I mean, there's so much positivity that it's easy to get caught up in all of the hype. There are some interesting models that are coming out, the analytics models, that have the Celtics kind of up above Philly in the overall results. I want to just put the Celtics, I think, at kind of what last year's results were. I really do think that somewhere around 49 wins is about right for this team. Somewhere maybe a second round exit. Maybe they get past the second round. That's, you know, up in the air. But I would think somewhere in that range, and that's where they were last year. But as I've been saying, if they do that while playing hard, while not blowing big leads, while, you know, not being frustrating, even if they lose the same games that they lose, but lose them in a non-frustrating way, I think fans are going to be happy with how this team is going. I think everybody kind of understands that the center situation is kind of in flux, and they still need to get Robert Williams up to speed or however they plan to address the center situation. They know that Tatum is now entering his third year, and he's still a year or two or three from reaching his maximum potential. And it, so they're still, like, I don't think anybody expects this year to be it. So I think a 49-win team somewhere in that range is probably going to be what we should expect, and I think what people would enjoy.
Not that we would expect anything less, but you got to love the comments about Kemba Walker from his old coach, Jim Calhoun.
Well, yeah, I mean, Calhoun is, you know, obviously a big Kemba Walker fan. People in Boston are going to love Kemba. And just from talking to him in the few weeks that we've had, he is a very personable guy. And frankly, he wants to talk to us. That's a big change from what we've had before, that Kemba is open and ready to talk to the media and in a meaningful, thoughtful way. Like, he's not BSing anybody. Like, he's talking and he's sharing his real feelings. So it's easy to like that guy. And he's been fighting against expectations his whole life. So he's not coming into Boston feeling like he's a big deal because he's a third-team All-NBA guy. He constantly feels the need to prove himself. And I know that he's excited about being on this team and having guys that can handle some of the scoring duties so he can go off and play maybe a more efficient style and not have to do things all the time like he did in Charlotte, where his usage rate was up over 31%. So he's a fun player. I really do think Boston's going to enjoy him. He's just right. I mean, he's just right, and he's at the right time for Celtics fans.
Is this team, is it important for this team to get off to a strong start this year, or is their psyche a little bit different than last year's?
I don't know that they're focused on any particular wins and losses to start the season. Brad Stevens is very focused on the process, with no pun intended, as they play silly. But it's all about building the good habits, playing the right way. And, you know, I know from playing blackjack, sometimes you play the right way and you lose. And that's just the way it goes, the cards that you're dealt. They're trying to play the right way. It's going to be a tough start to the season. You know, before Thanksgiving, they're already going to go on a long West Coast road trip. They're already going to play Philly and Toronto and some of the teams out West that are really good. So the wins and losses at the beginning of the season might be a little tough. And I think Brad Stevens has kind of quietly laid those expectations. Like, it's a tough beginning to the season, so just focus on doing things the right way. And what will happen is, even if you lose a few games at the beginning of the season, eventually, as you continue to build the good habits and do the right things and make the next right play, as he puts it, the wins will come. And every three-game losing streak will be met by a three-game winning streak somewhere down the road. So that, I think, is the bigger focus than coming out and proving to everybody that, hey, we're back and last year was a fluke and blah, 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 and we're you know, 10-1. Like, it's more about the process and getting to the end of the season having done the right things as often as they can.
All right, so tonight, do you go traditional cheesesteak? Do you go to South Philly, get a little John's roast pork, or do you go the vegan route because your body is a temple and it's opening game tomorrow night?
Can I tell you, I'm just going to try to take care of myself this season. I think last year on the road, I would have gone cheesesteak, but I'm working tonight as well because it's the NBA season opens tonight.
Right.
And I've got the Locked On NBA podcast to do, heavily featuring the first two games of the season. So I'm going to be hunkered down like a good boy, watching those games, making my notes, and getting ready for a podcast.
Excellent. Well, enjoy the games tonight and especially tomorrow night. Catch John's work, the Locked On Celtics podcast as well, and of course at masslive.com. Thanks, John. We'll see you next week.
You got it. Thanks.
Thanks to Rich. I always enjoy joining that show on Tuesdays. Thanks to all of you for listening. I enjoy recording this show for you every day, Monday through Friday. And I'm glad that you're subscribing. I'm glad that you're giving us 5 stars. And that good written review, it's really helping us rise in the rankings on the iTunes list. Really appreciate everybody's efforts there. I thank you very, very much. Wednesday night, the game is here, the first game of the regular season. So I'll have Tom Westerholm and we'll recap that. And so subscribe. And you'll hear that on the Thursday podcast. So subscribe to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.